think is the craziest thing of all is the fact that it doesn't matter where you're at, you can find the person for it. You have to bend, you have to. It doesn't matter where you're at. Second, you mentioned ethics in football. People who admittedly failed every high school math question and took it down like, I might be a teacher. They rattle off passer ratings and completion percentages and tell you about why so-and-so defensive lineman has been off the last couple of weeks. And, oh, I heard he had a flu bug. Oh, I heard he had some really difficult exams. Or they'll talk about, well, they're going to play here and it's going to be this temperature. And they rattle off all these statistics and all these different numbers and swear that Bobby Bowden has, like, become reincarnated in this person's body. It's absolutely huge. And it happens everywhere. It doesn't matter where you're at. What's really funny is that this is something that I think we all can relate to. We all do stuff like this. Brothers gather around. We love that we're talking. And when we watch that we're talking, we don't just watch the game and kind of enjoy it and, like, sit on the couch and talk about, like, well, how was it? How was it? When you watch it, you rattle off statistics and talk about so-and-so talk about how so-and-so goalie is playing and what player they're playing against. You rattle off all these statistics and overanalyze. Some of us do the very same thing with movies, with music. Some of us are infamous for ruining people's ability to enjoy really bad movies or shows and not want to just overanalyze everything. But so interesting is that this is just one way that we can do it. One form of grief. An example that shows this is one way that we exist is that when my brother and I were watching the Redmond Swim and Candy Cup back in 2008, far away from the I guarantee that neither of us, final minutes of the game, certainly come on the line, thinking about the situation, thinking about the numbers, or all these different complex aspects of the game, because you're in the moment, you're enjoying it, you're basking in the excitement. In the same way, when you find a piece of music you like, or a movie, or a book you really enjoy, maybe that piece of food that's your favorite thing to eat, sometimes you just put away that analytic part of yourself and just enjoy it. And appreciate it rather than tear it apart and decide to address the people. Today I'd like to try to do that with our story that is complex, a story that has different aspects to it. On one hand, extremely short, only 124 words to be true. If you need to read the story twice over, get up from your couch, grab a bowl from the fridge, get back, and kind of watch the next section of Christ's life, watch the story. But at the same time, there's all these different interpretations. So from the very beginning of the story, even 200 years before Jesus, you had individuals who interpreted the story, and they all came out with different ideas of what it was. And in the same way, after Jesus, the early Christian fathers, the rabbis, even modern interpreters, all came out with completely different understandings. What's going on here? It's very serious, short, story. So today I'd like to try to do some of this analysis, to really dig deep at it, tear it apart piece by piece. Because I believe that when you do this with the Bible, tear it apart a little bit, and really analyze it, you gain this new understanding, this new way to look at the text, the conditions, the symptoms, and that's enjoyment in the sense of enjoy of how the gospel is being shared, but enjoyment in the sense that it's never a new meaning that we can go before. It gives you a new way to look at God's word. And some of this is really crucial. A way that really invites what God is doing in the Bible, really makes us understand how to reflect our creation in Christ. All right, David, here we go. A little backstory. So the book of Genesis is divided into four pieces. First you have primeval history, which is Genesis 1 through 11. And this portion of Genesis is all about origins. It's about who people are, where did they come from, what makes people people. It talks about the stories of how what murder was, for example, what's going on with the big flood. All these different stories about humanity as a whole. After chapter 11, we get to something called patriarchal history, starting in chapter 12. of Babel is located in chapter 1. What it is, in some ways, it's the very end of one section, the end of the chapter. The German biblical scholar, Gerhard von Rath, was called the capstone. That piece that's going to transition us over to the next great section. I think that we need to think about that in reading. So today I'd like to take this apart. I want to look at two questions. These are two questions I want to ask you. It's very important for you. Those questions are, why do the people build Babel, both the city and the tower? Second, why does God punish them for building it? Most of us have grown up with this interpretation of the story, just like Steve said, how Babel was a tower that was built up in the sky, and people were trying to follow God, become like God, reach heaven. That's what a lot of people in the church are saying. And I'm not saying that I'm this way of looking at it is better or right. Because I think that in a story this complex, it's really hard to narrow down what is right, what is wrong, or what's the right way of doing it. Because so many people are searching for so many different ways. Like everybody can make a piece of right or wrong, but to offer a new understanding of something that the story starts out, and it's one thing to now the whole world has one language and a common speech. As men move eastward, they found a plain, Shinar, for the land. Literally, the Hebrew in verse 1 says one language and two words. And if people didn't have a very good verbal language, the whole idea is that everyone speaks language, everyone understands each other. And there's some kind of power in that. There's something good in the people that understand each other. You can see, you can come to each other, you can make good relationships. So you get all these people, they all understand each other. Then, you move, find a plane, place the heart, and they settle there. So you get all these men, and then, what's interesting is that, for the ancient people, all these big old empires, the Assyrians, the Babylonians, they're all starting to see us as what they the idea that people are instead of enjoying it, and this is a story that's happening kind of before this. And before there is the land of the for all these other people. So we're talking about something about origin. We're talking about so they go to this plain, they say, this is good, this is hot, build something here. So people say to each other, come, let's make bricks, make a girl. These bricks set a stone, carved the mortar. And they said, come, let's build ourselves a tower that reaches to heaven, so we may make a name for ourselves and not be scattered to the world. Something we often forget when we read these stories is that the tower isn't the only thing. What's interesting is when you look at all these medieval and later pictures painted of Babel, it's a giant Jim and I would laugh at this song because of the preposition into. The preposition into can mean you're running inside the tower, but it also means you're running into like the tower, so it's just people running into the walls of the tower and falling over. But it's this great idea that God is a strong power that's in the isn't just built for no reason. It's built for comfort. So if you see the power, you can interpret it as building something from your eye, building something for you. But often, the reason we're building is maybe it's too hard, maybe it's a protection. We're settling in a new place that hasn't been before. We're building a city. For example, in Deuteronomy 1:28, you see the walls of the city being inside the up into the sky, up into the heavens. This is the thing that the walls of the city are somehow having access to the sky, going up to their walls. Spread out of their walls is super tall, super big. You see a similar image in one of the legends of Israel. It's a text called The Parable of the Good Tree. It talks about how a wise man someone who owns a good tree, and one of the images you can see is that trees are pieces up into the heavens. This is the thing that you can see that it's into the heavens and the trees. It's this idea that the wise man who tends to God's wisdom lets it grow. Into heaven, but you just might just feel it. You get the feeling just not to come. After that, they say, we may make a name for us. It's a really odd thing. It kind of makes sense, it kind of doesn't. The Hebrew literally says exactly what it says. Make a name for us. And what it is it's a thing. It's a way of saying, make yourself understood as someone who's powerful, who's strong, someone who's important. The phrase to make a name for yourself is used to describe Abram. Right when God chooses Abram, he's not sure how to describe Abram. people would take this phrase and say the people of Babylon didn't do it. I don't think that's necessarily the truth. In fact, it's not a bad thing to have your name known. Otherwise, you don't call these people's names and charge them individually. It's not necessarily a bad thing. But where the rubber hits the road, you have to be scattered over the face of the forest. So this means that the people are not making a name for themselves. It's a mistake making a name for themselves. Just like they're not building a tower for the sake of building a tower. That they say every day. Who can build a tower for the sake of building a tower? But they're doing it for a reason. That reason is not to be scattered over the face of the forest. This phrase is the back end of a purpose clause. So what the idea is in this line of what the people are saying, that it's all leading up to this point. You're doing these things not as a king, but as a king. You're not building a tower because you want to build a tower. You're building a tower because you want to build a tower. That's kind of an odd thing. When you first hear that, this is one of those things that you really don't see as a story in the first place. You do it not knowing what you're doing. What kind of thing is that? See, it sounds kind of bad, but at the same time, it's like, people have a fear of building things scattered. It's scattered. Like a paraphrase of this phrase. Let's build a thing, what we call power, in order to make our name great, lest we become scattered and fight. So to answer this question, why the people are building this power, when you look at this thing, it seems like they're building it not so much for beauty of heaven, not so much for the title, for the show God off, or something like that, but it seems like they're just worried about it. They're worried about being scattered. They're giving some kind of protection, some way to keep themselves from reaching this horrible end, pushed out of the land of their death. It's kind of worth addressing the question, why are they breaking up? But now it's important that we ask, why is God protecting them? Is God really that amazing or something like that? Is that a problem that people came together to form a wall? Genesis 11, 5, and 7, it says that the Lord came down to the tower and the men were breaking. The Lord said, as young people speak to the kingdom, and you have begun to destroy them, then nothing that is done will be impossible for them. Come, let us go down and see their land, for they will not be able to do it. So God's up in heaven, because heaven's really not God's land. God sees his power and sees his glory. He that talks to these angels with him, he says, look at this house. Something wrong with it. You don't know what it is. But something's wrong with it. And God's really worried that there's nothing that's going to be impossible. They're going to be able to do more things than ever. So God says, what can you do? Take your language. Make you speak different languages. It's really just a calling to that. Actually, not. It's just something, they're doing something that's worried that there's more repercussions than that. And stirring them great. The Lord scattered them to them all over the world. He stopped them. That is why it's called Babel, and the Lord sees the land of the whole world. maybe go outside that normal zone of maybe to talk to someone that's awkward, so weird, but some of you just don't get along very well. Maybe it's a call to us to maybe offer a little bit more of our time and what we have, some ministry that supports us, maybe a form of support, give a little bit more time, maybe go somewhere we normally wouldn't go, maybe do something we wouldn't want to do, even God. Feel out of our element. Doesn't feel good to me. Sometimes God calls us to that. Sometimes God calls us to that by hitting us not with a bright path or with a two-way door. Because sometimes God shakes us. Sometimes God shakes us. Sometimes God shatters us. Because that's what we're doing.